Welcome, everybody. Another episode of the Beyond the Deal. We got a new background thing, logo.
How are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. Oh. I mean, there is somebody at this table that's anxious, and it is not me right now. I think that's obvious who it is.
Oh, okay.
There was like an anxiety meter that was like right next to our face, I'd be like, yeah, but we got to calm you down here. That's the goal. Yeah. Hi.
I did yoga this morning too.
Yeah, that it
like I was feeling good, and then Paul all of a sudden was like, "Hey, I gotta go," and I was like, "What?"
Well, and we had an hour delay to the kids' school this morning too, and so that always throws everything for a loop.
But yeah, and then actually, you know, you mentioned the new background. I've also got some cubes coming,
nice.
Some mic cubes. Yeah. We're gonna get some branding on it.
Mic cubes. That's something.
They're called something though. They're not. I forget.
Yeah. I put zero time and thought into mic cubes, but
you just show up are the talent.
Say it again so everybody can hear it.
But yeah, so we're rolling. I'm excited about this conversation.
Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually kind of like went through it with Paul.
Mm-hmm. And so first of all, tell folks what we're going to be talking about today.
Oh,
or do you want me to tell people what we're going to talk about today?
Sure.
Okay. So I think when I'm preparing to go down and talk in Fort Lauderdale on a panel of agents who have made $1 million, and I think there's going to be 300 or 400 people there, and we're going to go through just sort of inspirational stuff about like what it takes in this business to make $1 million a year in GCI. Because that is, you know, when you're making $1 million a year, you are in the top 0.01% of real estate agents nationwide. Like the percentage of people that make $1 million to them in real estate is very, very, very small. And so, you know, Aaron, my coach and mentor's intention by this is to sort of inspire people and give people a different perspective, because I know everybody that's going to be on this panel and everybody does it a little bit differently. Right. So there's a lot of ways that you can make $1 million in real estate. I think that there's some core foundational things that we have always done together. But when we started talking about that, you and I had the conversation about whether or not making $1 million is ultimately, at least in the real estate space, if that's what I would suggest people strive and try to obtain. And
yeah.
So we're going to be talking about like, you know, whether or not that's worth it and what it takes to get there, and then perhaps some perspective that might be helpful for people to have.
Right. And it's a little bit of an overwhelming conversation because there's so many directions we could go.
Yeah.
And my initial thought when we brought this to the table was like, Ben, I know you have your own thoughts on $1 million and making $1 million as an agent, but you got to tell people how.
Yeah.
Like half of the agents don't care what you think about it. They just got to know how. Mm-hmm. And if you've done it, tell me, you know? So that was my kind of big push. And then you kind of would come back with like, yeah, but like, that's not my message. So we worked through it and kind of how do we say there is a way, but then when you get there, what happens? And like, there's also another way. There's short-term thinking and short-term goals, and then there's the long-term path.
For sure.
And then long-term vision. And when I was telling Paul, you know, working through our conversation, I was like, please just like listen and let me talk it out, because there's so many different ways you could pull it in. There is this great message there. And he was like, at the end, he was like, I mean, we've all seen the athlete have a breakout year and then fizzle. Mm-hmm. Or you've seen the Tom Brady's who went low and slow and took care of how they were moving forward and outlasted everybody.
Yeah.
And that's what you want to be. You want to outlast. If you're truly competitive to the competitive agent that wants to be the best, the competitiveness is truly in the long game. And so we're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
And just kind of the different avenues.
Yeah.
We'll see.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I can imagine that, you know, again, you've been in sort of the corporate world with your previous jobs. Mm-hmm. And then you went, you know, you did, you know, stay-at-home mom for a while and you built a business and that sort of thing. But I'm imagining that you haven't been in a like a social circle of business people that have these conversations before.
Meaning?
Like you haven't been in proximity to a lot of people that are doing this sort of thing, striving to make $1 million, talking about whether or not it's worth doing that or not doing that.
I think, I mean, in my conversations, of course, money is always coming up and like how expensive everything is and like it's never enough. So the idea is to make as much as possible, to be able to just have freedom. Mm-hmm. But the argument to maybe not do that, and that's not the answer, is different.
Well, let's get into it. So I think, like, where do you want to start? Because I think one of the things that works really well about the two of us is that, you know, when you're sort of inquisitive and bringing me down, you ask questions that I wouldn't normally sort of think of to answer. But like when you look at this topic, what is the most interesting thing for you?
Okay, there's two things. One is the unique situation that an agent has. The more they work, the more money they will get. You don't have to like have a background or any kind of, what's the word, like any finances to invest. You don't
capital.
Have capital. Yeah. You don't have to have capital. You don't even have to know anybody. Or a college degree, you just have to have your license.
I've seen young kids start in this business and no capital, just like literally a headset and a set of numbers to call. And they'll make six figures right off the bat.
So it's literally the perfect example of the American dream. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have anything and you can make a lot from nothing.
Right.
So that is amazing.
Never more obvious than the fact that we have in the United States, I think there's something like, oh God, I forget the exact number, but like in the state of Massachusetts, we have like 72,000-73,000 licensed real estate agents. Now think about that, 72,000 in just in the state of Massachusetts alone. So there's, I think 1.6 million last time I checked and I haven't looked at it, but 1.6 million licensed real estate agents in the United States. Mm-hmm. That is a lot of people considering that we only have this past year, just over 4 million real estate transactions. So if you have 1.6 million agents fighting over 4 million transactions, that's roughly 2.3, 2.4 transactions per agent.
Okay.
That's not a hell of a lot, right? And that's why you see so many agents get in here, because the barrier to entry is low, mm-hmm. right? So there's very little investment of time or money to be able to get into the game. You have to do 40 hours of an online course and get a C on an exam and you can get your real estate license. Mm-hmm. And then you affiliate with a brokerage and there is no lack of real estate brokerages that will take anybody that has a heartbeat and a real estate license.
Okay.
And so if you're coming into this game, it's very easy to get licensed and start the business. But that's also why we have an 85% failure rate in this business too, is because people drastically underestimate how hard it is to actually do it.
But it's possible.
For sure.
The harder you hustle, the harder you work, you will eventually see a payoff. Mm-hmm. You will see results. So I love that.
Yeah.
A plus B equals C. And I think there is something comforting in that.
Yeah.
But there's a catch. So I do want to talk about that. And the other kind of part of all of this that I had never really thought about is it's not like when you get a salary increase from 150 to 200 grand and then you just continue to build on that. With real estate, it all starts over.
Yep.
The clock strikes 12 at midnight on January 1st and you're at zero and you have to make all of that again. Yep. There's no guaranteed salary in real estate. Well, that's the other side of the coin.
And that's some of the toughest things for real estate is the mental game of it, because, you know, every year we set goals, you know, myself personally in the office, everybody that I know that's successful in real estate sets goals. And then you get to December 31st and you either meet or you don't exceed your goals. And then even if you do, it starts over again. Like that clock resets at the beginning of the year, your goals reset and you're back at zero. And you got to start it all over again.
Right.
Right after. So
it doesn't matter what you made last year.
Nope.
It almost sets you up for like worse if you're like, well, dang, I got to beat it.
Well, especially if you have increased. So this is the trap, right? And we talk about the trap here, but the trap is that you get into the real estate business because the barrier to entry is very, very low. And then as you come in with a lot of energy and enthusiasm, and even if you get connected with the right people, you start to make money and all this kind of stuff. Now you're working extraordinarily hard because the level of competition out there is immense, right? There's 1.6 million agents fighting over 4 million transactions. So you've got a lot of competition, not only against, you know, experienced agents. Like if somebody came into the Mansfield real estate market right now and tried to compete against me, again, that's going to be a tough road because I have all of this infrastructure already set up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you come in, you start making a lot of money, and you realize that you need to sustain that level of intensity and activity year after year, mm-hmm. unless you sort of start to scale or invest your money or do something differently. But I was told at the beginning of my career that the mid-level agent, anybody making like, let's say like $150,000 to maybe $300,000 to them at the end of the year, I think that that is probably the hardest position in real estate to do, mm-hmm. because you don't have enough financial flexibility to be able to invest a lot of money in support. And so the agents making less than that, they can do 10, 12, 15 deals a year. And maybe they're not providing the level of service that they want and all that kind of stuff, but it's, you know, they have extended breaks during the year. If you're only doing 15 transactions a year, you have a lot of off time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Conversely, if you get to the position that I'm in, you know, when you have staff and agents and everything else, mm-hmm. my overhead is extraordinarily high, but it's also like, that's the way that I want it because now I have my time back.
You have some weekends.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of those things where it's that mid-level agent is really, really difficult. And so when you get into that, you need to make conscious decisions about what's important. Is spending the money that you make important, or is it reinvesting into your business, or is it reinvesting, or is it investing into assets that will pay you money so you can start to be less attached to the earned income that you make?
And I think that's the point right there where you think, okay, I just need to make more. And they're not wrong. Like life is just expensive. You're thinking long-term, you're thinking retirement, you're thinking more kids, you're thinking college. Like the answer is not always to make less. It actually is to make more. But you have two choices. At some point along your path to making more, making that $1 million in a year, you're going to have this inflection point, this fork in the road where, like that middle agent, where they start to work for the money. And they will reach the goal of $1 million, but it will cost everything. Mm-hmm. It will require everything of them. Because you have to do what? 75 transactions a year?
Depending on where you are, but yeah.
I mean, that's a ton. Yep. So you have that choice. Like, get to the goal no matter the cost. Mm-hmm. And that is the fastest way there to the $1 million, to the making more. Or you have this other option, this other piece of the fork, where you say, I'm going to keep hustling, but I'm going to live on less. I'm not going to reward myself, which we should talk about, like the trick of rewarding, because it's so hard. Mm-hmm. So you have that desire to kind of like give yourself breaks with vacations and cars and stuff like that, to resist that temptation and to take it and to then invest and build slowly.
So here's what I would say, because I want to clarify that point, because I think the fork in the road, I think the sort of example of it, I think I understand why you're saying that, but I don't know that I necessarily agree with like building fast versus building slow. I think it's a decision based on sort of where you are in your career and what you want out of life, because I've seen plenty of people build really, really fast, but they build intentionally and smart. Mm-hmm. And they fast forward everything. Your point about sort of living on less and living below your means, it's hugely important. But I don't know that that necessarily means that you need to build slow. You can build fast and reward yourself and spend money, right? Or you can build fast, invest that money either into assets that pay you money or invest it back into your business.
Whether that's people or platforms or
education. proximity to people,
coaching.
You can, there's like, we're doing a huge push on media this year. So with a huge push on media, there's a lot of investment of capital. So when I get to the end of every year, I look at where can I invest my capital in order to grow and get closer to my goals. One of the things that I could do.
You just said that. When I get to the end of every year, I look at where can I invest my capital. Would you say an older version of you, a younger version of you is how can I spend this?
I think I.
Did you do that?
Yes. I think that there was always an eye on investments, and that's why I'm in a better position now than perhaps I could have been if I spent more.
Okay.
But for sure, the old version had to motivate myself with rewards in order to push myself to succeed. So I had to, so like for years, my goals were, all right, if I do $500,000, I get to buy a Range Rover, right? And, you know,
okay. I would. That was your motivation.
That was my rewards. Motivation. Yeah.
So that makes sense.
This watch, if I hit $300,000 in earned income, I'll go out and buy this watch that I want. $500,000, I'll go out and buy the Range Rover.
I mean, I'm kind of doing that right now. I'm like, if we just will get to this point, then I can get a new kitchen.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. But then you look at, so what I started to do, and this is going back to, you know, that mindset of growing fast versus growing slow versus, you know, sort of being intentional about the way that you grow. So you have a young kid like Pedro. Pedro comes in and he's not married yet and he doesn't have kids and the obligations. So for him, grow fast. Like invest 70 hours of your time every week because you have it. There will be a certain point in your life where you won't be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at that point, but do it intentionally, right? Set your intentions to, okay, leave well below my means so that I can invest the money instead of just rewarding yourself, invest it into your business or invest it into assets that pay you money because that will ultimately get you freedom.
And that is shifting between short-term thinking, short-term motivation, mm-hmm. short-term rewards to the long-term thinking, the long-term motivation.
Yep.
You may be working at the same speed, but your end game is different.
So I heard this once where in the evaluation process of whether you should buy something or do something, if you look at it,
buy something or do something
that you, to reward yourself, right? So if you talk about rewards,
oh, okay.
You should look at it from the standpoint of, if you want to buy something stupid, watch or a crazy car or something like that, you should be able to pay for it twice in cash and it should come from residual income. So think about that for a second. So you want to buy a $5,000 watch, right? The $5,000 watch will require that you invest about $100,000 because on $100,000 invested into an asset that provides you with residual income, very easily you can make $5,000.
Okay.
On that residual income. Now think about the difference between that, right? Now, instead of earning the money, I'm going to earn money and then I'm going to go spend $5,000. So I've got to pay taxes on that. And then I've got to go out. So you, not only do you have to make the money, you've got to pay the taxes on the money. And then you got to pay taxes on the watch when you buy it. So a $5,000 watch isn't really $5,000. It's $7,500 mm-hmm. because you got to pay taxes on it, right? Versus you invest all of your money into assets that pay you money. And then once you start receiving that as residual income, that's the money that you spend,
mm-hmm.
right?
And that's long-term
thinking. So you've got to, again, pay for it. You got to have the ability to pay for it twice in cash. And that money should come from residual income. And then if you just pay your living expenses and you live well below your means. Now, I didn't do that. So I'm not suggesting that that's easy. But mm-hmm. that now is everything that we do. That's the, I look at a new kitchen and I'd love the new kitchen too, but a new kitchen would cost me $200,000 at my house.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do it right, because that's the only way I want to do it. Mm-hmm. If we do it right and it's $200,000, I look at that and I go, all right, well now I need to perhaps work another full year to have not $200,000, but that's going to $300,000 okay. because I got to pay taxes on it.
Right. Yes.
So I've got to make $300,000 to pay a $200,000 kitchen. And that's like a whole year of like excess capital. And what could that capital, if it's invested, what could it do?
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm sitting there going, well, is that actually worth it? Should I work an extra year of my life for this kitchen that I want? Or is the kitchen that I have good enough to do? Now, some of those things make sense. We put in like the garden that we're putting in.
Yeah.
The garden's going to cost me $20,000 this year.
Yeah.
Right? Just like that. But that is something that we will use every day. And we made the intention and we're paying for it in residual income. And it fits all of that criteria. But I'm not making enough in residual income to buy $100,000 or $200,000 kitchen right now either.
So we've established like the motivation differences between short term and long term. Like, what are the paths for both? Short term, what does that look like? Tell me the story of the agent that does short term. Tell me that story.
So what happens to him? Yeah, it's very easy. That was my story.
And then I want to tell the story of the other. I want to tell two stories.
Yep. All right. So the short-term agent, the short-term thinking, what that really looks like is again, and I believe a lot of this has to do with proximity to people, because in no uncertain terms, I put myself in a situation that I put myself in proximity to people that were making a lot of money, but a lot of it was short-term thinking, right? Motivation was gained by reward. Or external
status.
Yep. There was a lot of look at me, look at what I'm doing, look
number
at what
one
I have, look at the
banner.
Things that I do, the suit that I have, the car that I drive, the, you know, the number of sales that you do per year. And that's very, to me, it was very motivational because I'm competitive. So you get in this competitive spirit that you want to go out and you want to beat, you know, XYZ, you want to do 75 transactions, you want to make $1 million. And so you push yourself and push yourself.
What does it take to get there? What is the agent doing?
I think that
to get to that level,
I can speak from personal experience and people that I've seen, but most of the time it requires between 60 and 70 hours per week of work. Okay. And I know a lot of people throw around, oh, I work 60 hours a week. And I don't believe that they actually do. 70 hours a week is 10 hour days, 7 days a week. So that means you're showing up at the office at 8 o'clock every day and you're leaving at 6 p.m. And that includes Saturday and Sunday. And so if you only work a half a day on Saturday and Sunday, it's really like 5 12-hour days and 2 half days on the weekends. Mm-hmm. So that means you're at the office from 7 to 7 mm-hmm. every single day. Mm-hmm. And then you're working half of the day each day on the weekend. Mm-hmm. That is a tremendous amount of work.
That requires a lot of you.
All of you, arguably, right? So that is what I did. I used to get at the office at between 7 and 7:30 every day. I was not finished with work until 6:30, 7 o'clock. I'd work most of the weekends. So realistically, I worked between 60 and 70 hours a week for like 12 years.
Okay.
And
I have two questions. Doing what? And how, what year did you finally get to that goal? How many years of 60 to 70 hours did it take to get to $1 million?
Yeah. So I think that the activities, did you ask about activities?
Yeah. What were you doing?
Yeah. So it's not, this is the beauty of real estate, is that it's not overly complicated. Nothing that I did is groundbreaking. What I did was a very simple plan of I did active lead generation. So that would look like I would get in the office and I would role play between 7:30 and 8 o'clock every single day. So I had a different role play partner. I would work on my scripts and objection handlers and we would just get better at what we were doing.
Okay.
So it requires practice and then active prospecting between 8 and 12.
Discipline.
So discipline, you get on the phones, no distractions, no emails, no negotiations, no
playing around
extra
with
work,
media. Yeah.
Nope. And there was a ton of accountability. So if I didn't show up, if I didn't do my job, if I didn't make the contacts that I needed to, there was financial consequences, because that was what was required for me to not sort of get grimy and just not do it for a week in a row.
Right.
It would, like, I had to box myself in with all of this stuff. Accountability if I don't go to the gym, accountability if I don't do...
You were laser focused.
Well,
and you created an environment for you to be.
I created an environment that required me to be laser focused. I don't know that I was. I was always sort of, I did it because I boxed myself in. I did it because I put myself around people that were doing it. And I had this fear of not being perceived as a, you know, successful person or somebody that kept my word about what I was going to do. And so I was very concerned about how I appeared to my peers or to the general public. But in knowing that, I boxed myself in with all of this accountability and structure and routine, coaching and proximity to people. And so I would get out every day. I would do, 4 hours of prospecting. I do my lead follow up, and then I'd practice again in the middle of the day. So from 12:30 to 1 o'clock, I would do another role play. This was on the listing presentation, so I could get better at what I was doing, presenting to people like live and in and person.
When the transaction.
Yep.
So you were doing this. You started seeing an uptick in your transactions because of these, what you were putting in.
Yep.
Exactly. Like agents. What you put in, you get a result.
Yep.
And which is beautiful, but also a trap. So you're doing this, you're seeing.
Well, it's a trap. It's a trap because people get addicted to the way that they make money. And then it's very hard once you have success to be able to pivot and change something. So imagine you work really, really hard for 3, 4, 5 years in a row, and now you're making $500,000 in real estate doing it this exact way.
I mean, yeah, it's like now you know you
have the ability to produce outsized outcomes, and you want to capitalize on that because you've worked really hard to get yourself to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to scale back or to do things differently, even if you sort of acknowledge and can understand that this path is better for you, the fear and uncertainty about letting go of that,
of what works,
is palpable. Like, it is a very, very difficult thing. And that's why you see when people get success in real estate, they do things the exact same way over and over and over and over again. The only reason that they generally change it is if it stops working.
Or if they burn out.
Correct.
Which is, you see time and time again, I would assume. You see agents reach this level, and to sustain it, they either, at the cost of everything else, mm-hmm. or they pull back. And they say, I can't do that anymore.
Well, that's why you see a lot of people will come out of the gate first couple of years. They'll make a lot of money. Like, maybe they make $300,000, $400,000, $500,000.
They have a breakout year like an athlete.
Yep. And then all of a sudden you see them, they revert back and they just kind of settle into this area where most agents make, good agents make between $100,000 and $200,000 a year. And that is... That's
maintainable.
It's maintainable. But again, you wake up every day going, well, where's that next deal going to come? There's no real like calmness. Even when you're making $100,000 to $200,000, you're not perhaps as harrowed and frantic as you are if you are trying to make $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000. But it's not a calm, peaceful place to be. A lot of people, if you're watching this and you're not in real estate and considering getting in, if you've got a job that's making you $120,000 to $150,000 salary,
mm-hmm.
you can skate. Like, arguably, I talked to some of my friends who are in businesses like that or mm-hmm. have salary positions like that,
mm-hmm.
and they can skate for like a year. They make the same amount of money. Maybe they're not getting the promotion.
They can take a breath.
Yeah. And if they're pushing to get to a position, then they get to that position, and there can be a little bit of...
an exhale.
Coasting.
Yes. Right? And that is not the case.
No.
You do not get those like known deposits mm-hmm. into your bank account.
I think that you can potentially get to that place in real estate, but it just takes a much longer time, and you have to go well beyond where you want to settle into.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you want to make $500,000 routinely that just shows up like, like the income that I make just comes in. You have to grind for a very long time.
You had to go way past that.
Yep.
Way past, and at the cost of a lot. That's the path. And then.
So that's the cost. You talk about the cost. The cost is nights, weekends, relationships, vacations.
Health.
Your health. But a lot of it has to do with the mental energy that you have to put in to making sure that sort of revenue stream continues. It requires almost all of your mental energy. So even if you can physically remove yourself and get time, so you go on vacation, my vacations were horrible. Like mm-hmm. I would go on vacation and I know mentally I would sit there and I'd be at the beach and I'd be sitting in a chair and, my wife's sitting next to me and the girls are playing in the sand and I literally my mind can't get away from work. Like, even if I'm taking the time off, I'm sitting there thinking, are things really going well? I should be working. Or what most people do, and I only started a couple of years ago doing, where I completely detached from work. But I'd get up, we'd go out to California in January, and I would wake up at, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, West Coast time, and I'd work for 6 or 7 hours. And then the kids would get up at, you know, 7, 8 o'clock, and they would hang out with Colleen. And then I would get done at whatever, noon, you know, after working a full day. And then I'd hang out with the kids, but work was still going on. So there was this parallel thing of, you know, I'm on vacation. I feel guilty for working and not spending and not being there fully and completely with my family. But then when I'm with my family, then sort of I'm distracted and I'm feeling like crap is falling apart at work. And you go back and forth between this, and then you get home from the vacation and it hasn't refreshed and rejuvenated you.
No,
it's just stressed you out, because now all the pressure to get ready to go away. And then while you're away, you're still working. And then when you get back, you have to make up for it. And the whole process of going on vacation is just not enjoyable.
And that is what happens when you're working for the money.
Yep.
And so you then started to shift your vision to less short-term transaction, year after year after year, to like visioning out long-term and being like, oh my God, I can't do this for forever. I can't do this at 65, 72. Like, what is the long 40, game?
42. Like I when I made my first $1 million in real estate, I didn't want to sell real estate anymore. I was so burnt out that I just didn't want any part of it. I was within 6 months of leaving the business.
Because you were working for the money and you were just, it was never going to end.
I didn't realize it at the time. I was just miserable. I was so miserable. And there was not, like, I was in shape because that was the only thing that probably got me through it, was I would get up and I would work out so intensely that like it,
but you,
it
relieved, yeah, like, all of my and stress. Were you really in shape, or were you just like burning out? I mean, you injured yourself. Well, you worked out so hard.
I mean, that's why I had to have shoulder surgery, and I herniated 2 discs in my neck and all that kind of stuff. So it wasn't like
you were taking it out on your body.
Correct. And so
to survive.
Right. And so then I'm sitting there like, all right, well, I realize that this is not a sustainable way for me to live.
So then you made the shift.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not like a snap the finger shift, but I made conscious decisions to put myself in proximity to different types of people. One specifically in my coach, Aaron Avello. And when I met him, we started just working on like sort of who am I and what do I actually want? Because I don't know personalities and that sort of thing, but I am a provider. So like, I want to make sure everybody else is, you know, fed and happy at the expense of everything that I do. And the problem that I've realized is that in doing that over and over and over again, you're eventually going to burn out to the point that you can't do it for them anymore. So even though I was providing the financial resources for my wife and kids to be happy, like I wasn't there mentally or emotionally.
Or even physically.
Yeah. And I think that real estate is good because, you know, I was able to like, I was there, but mentally I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to finish up this so I can make a phone call. You know, I'm in the middle of dinner and I walk.
Oh, yeah. We all have that feeling.
Walk away from the dinner table
just
to take
go to sleep.
A conversation.
I've got to go get on the computer.
Yep. It ends up taking all of you. And again, to get out of that trap, I had to be introduced to somebody that started to paint a different picture and allow me to paint my own, right? Like, what is it that I actually want?
Long term.
Even short term.
Like, oh, yeah.
Even like, who is the person that I want to be right now?
But you still needed to make it money. You still needed income.
So there's two ways to do it, right? There's you can go out and make more money, or you can change your lifestyle, right? Like in no uncertain terms, right now I could be financially free and independent if I adjusted my lifestyle. I live in a $1.5 million home. I buy cars. I go on vacations. Like my kids go to private school. Like we don't hold any credit card balances, like all of those things. But if I sold my house and I moved to a less expensive area and I can, like, if I pulled things back, in no uncertain terms, I wouldn't need to make any more money right now. But I'm not. I've made the conscious decision, and this has been an ongoing conversation. But I made the conscious decision that the lifestyle that I have is not worth giving up to become financially free and independent sooner than I could. Mm-hmm. So I could have that now. Mm-hmm. I'm making a conscious decision that I am delaying that in order to keep the lifestyle that I have right now.
You didn't delay it. I want to go back to what you said, where you said the decision to stop doing what you knew would work and to switch to pull back and just redirect that fear, that like stepping out into the unknown is palpable. Walk me through you doing that. Like, you knew it would work and you said, okay, but I'm going to try something different. Like, in the middle of your, like, 20 years in.
Yeah, this is arguably, like, this is where I could make.
This is the fork.
Yeah. I think.
And people are going to face it at different times in their life, at different numbers, but they're going to face it. And walk me through yours.
So I think that mine was much more of a sort of a personal development sort of conversation that I had to have with myself with the assistance of some coaching. Really great people. Yeah. Because I had to sort of pull back this character that I created, right? The hardworking grinder,
suit wearing,
really well put together, suit wearing provider. And so I
number almost, one every year.
I use that as a shield, you know, a very good shield to deflect, you know, sort of even internally what I would allow myself to see. So I had to start to pull back and really understand the person that I was versus the beliefs that I had created over time. I had some pretty hardcore beliefs about who I was as a person, but that was simply a story that I was telling myself that I've become attached to. So I told myself for a very, very long time that I was not a people person. I don't really like people. I don't like hanging out with people. Mm-hmm. And that was almost a defense mechanism that I put in place because I'm uncomfortable in social situations. It doesn't necessarily
mean that you don't like it.
That I don't like people. Uh-huh. It's just that I'm wildly uncomfortable in certain situations. And I also use that as an excuse because that allowed me to just stay and grind and do what I do better, right? So I'm better on the phones behind my desk than going out in person. Mm-hmm. And I was a better follower than a leader. That was another story that I told myself. And I
would
became
you say
very attached to it.
You switched the word, it's easier for me, to just thinking I'm better at this.
In what context?
Like, I'm better at, what did you say? I'm better at on the phone than in person.
Yeah.
The real thing is it's easier for me on the phone than in person.
Yeah, because
not that you're better at it.
I think that, again, when you go back to the people get attached to the way that they make money, they
yes.
get attached to the way that they do things, they get attached to the story that they tell themselves mm-hmm. that they are. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about this development, the development for me was much more internal about what I have to do.
And really looking in the mirror.
Yep. And then starting to, I had, you know, Aaron said to me, and I've told this story before, but, you know, Aaron said to me after an event that we had in person, he said, you know, Ben, he turned to me and said, you have the capability to lead people. And whether it was the first time that I had heard that, said somebody said that to me, or whether it was the first time that I actually heard it. It was like the first time that I had heard that. And so again, when you talk about people and coaches that you put yourself in proximity to, they started to just illustrate what was possible and what the potential was that I had. And then I started to believe that that was true. And this was a 3-year process to get me to this point.
So, but what did that look like mechanically? So that was your big realization that you were just doing things because you thought that it was true about you, but maybe it wasn't. So then What does that look? What happens with you going out on to into the unknown?
So where did that happen? Yeah. What?
And then how did you start to say, okay, long term, I still want to make this money, but I can't do it the way I'm doing it anymore. So then you took a hard right, or maybe a soft right.
So how has to do with? I think the biggest lesson that I learned is I started to, at any point in the moment that I'm in, I started to recognize, and I just simply notice the decisions that I was making, whether or not they aligned with sort of what I wanted out of life, right? So does making $1 million a year align with what I want out of life? Well, it only does if I can become financially free and independent so that I can spend more time doing what I really want to do.
Yeah, that's right? Powerful.
And so I would notice in the moment that I was in, is this activity moving me closer or further away from that? From freedom. And then I started to do things more in alignment with who I naturally am versus the character that I created to make me feel comfortable in you know, from the general public or from my peers or whatever it might be. So it was, you know, tactically, it looked like I would have a mindset group call with me and Mark Ramey was on it and my buddy Ryan Petrucci and Aaron Novello. And we would all get together and we would talk about sort of mental, spiritual, and emotional sort of development. And that was once a week. And then my coaching calls where they had historically been very like numbers driven, how many contacts,
yes,
you know, like what skills are you working on? What all of this kind of stuff. All of my coaching calls that I had with Aaron were also sort of fully discussing, you know, the beliefs that I had and the stories that I was telling myself. And
so it went from how many transactions do you have coming down the pipeline to like, how are you working on yourself this week and changing some beliefs about yourself?
Well, and I think
like the questions. And then I also hear when you switch from long-term, short-term, but just like working for the money, the reward was your motivation. And then all of a sudden, this idea of freedom became your motivation. And it wasn't $1 million anymore. It was just whatever got me freedom. Mm-hmm. And so that is the switch where the money started working for you. The number started following your desires and goals instead of the number dictating your desires and goals. That's the switch. And it was switching from rewards to freedom.
So I think, yeah, there's a couple of things that come up. Number one, too, just so people are clear that reward was probably, for me personally, it was probably 30% of my motivation.
Okay.
Fear of failure was probably the vast majority of it. I was obnoxiously afraid of failing, of looking like I couldn't, of not providing for my family, of like fear drove me. But I would argue
that. And it's powerful.
It's
arguably one of the most powerful motivators is fear.
Well, that's why most salespeople, if you look year after year, I would guarantee you that the vast majority of salespeople will make exactly how much money they need to make in order to survive. So if you have to make $150,000 in real estate to pay your bills,
you'll somehow get there.
You'll make $150,000. You won't make $250,000. You will make $300,000, $500,000. You'll make $150,000.
Fear dictates the number.
Now,
the motivator dictates the number, not the other way around.
You might be able to make $200,000 if you set a really worthwhile goal to go out and buy a $50,000 boat or something like that. You might push yourself and you might use fear and reward simultaneously to push you to be better. But I just wanted to clarify that for me, the vast majority of that was fear.
Okay.
But I think people use fear and reward sort of to motivate themselves to do more. Mm-hmm. To your second,
fear and reward, they were the motivators and they were dictating the number and you were working for the number. Mm-hmm. When you switched and you realized that freedom was actually who you really, based on who you really are, that's what you really want. Then it didn't matter the number as much because the number was being driven by the motivator, or it,
so that
the motivator.
So I guess I want to define freedom for you, but also
I mean it can mean in a number of things to a number. It depends on the person.
Well, that's where people need to define what freedom is for them, right? So, and then the yeah. So define freedom. So freedom for me is there's financial freedom, there's time freedom, there's location freedom, in my opinion. So time, financial, and location. Ideally, most people who have earned income enough, right, they might gain some of their time freedom back, but they might have to live in a specific location in order to do a job, right? My definition of freedom is to pay all of my living expenses with residual income that is not dependent on me going out on a daily basis and actually making money.
What are those? That could be investment properties.
That could be investment properties, residual income from EXP's downline situation. That could be businesses. That could be a number of different things. Now, I don't think that
media platforms.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways that you can sort of create residual income.
And you just have to find the one that fits best.
I think diversification of it is important because, okay. And very few things are actually like residual where you don't, it doesn't require any sort of time for you to keep an eye on it. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that you don't need to like put any time, but you know, most of it will allow me to be location and time, have time freedom so that I can pick up in the middle of any time period and I could go for 2 months or 3 months over to Europe, or I could go to California, or if a family member needed me, 6 weeks to just devote all of my time and energy. Right now, it would be very difficult for me to just stop working and just not come to the office and not produce income, right? Financial freedom for me is the ability to wake up without, you know, that obligation. And then I can really start to work on working the way that I want. And I want to do meaningful work with people that I like and enjoy. I think that looks like 25 hours a week, right? And this is what I've noticed too, is that the grind mindset, everybody that's making a ton of money in real estate that has a grind mindset and makes, you know, a lot of money.
Yeah.
They're always like harrowed. They're out of time. They're always like always working and be like, you know, they're the ones that you go to a conference and they're out in the hallway while the conference is going on, putting deals together. And they're going out to, I got to go back to my hotel room. I got to do a couple of things and then I can meet you. Right.
I don't want to sound judgmental, but it was at the cost of something too. Like you can see it on them.
Yeah.
There's no wedding ring. They've got bags under their eyes.
They get to the end of that day and they go to the bar and they drink. Or they do drugs, or they, you know, they're promiscuous with women because that sort of gives them that dopamine, that reward at the end of the day. They feel like they deserve it because they're so stressed. And they use that to lower down their anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at every sort of financially free person.
Yeah.
There's a calmness.
There's
about
a lightness.
Them.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I have to go and do this. I have to go. It's like, hey, let's take our time. Let's look at this. And, you know, it may be good. It may not be good. But let's evaluate this.
And gosh, aren't they their attraction, like the vibe they give off, the energy is so magnetic compared to the rundown, super stressed. I mean, it's almost like a deflection.
Yeah.
When you give off that energy. So yeah, freedom.
So freedom for me, and that's why it's difficult for me, again, just to go back to the like point of this podcast, but it's difficult for me to give context on how to make $1 million without having a conversation about what you really want. And so I think that there's two different types of individuals, and perhaps there's a lot of different ones, but you know, you talk about the newer agent that comes in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of those things where you don't, if you don't learn bad habits, and so if you're not joining the real estate industry and then prospecting, cold calling and making a lot of money and then spending a lot of money and then making a lot of money and spending a lot of money and setting the goals higher and goals higher and goals higher, to change somebody who's already done that is very, very difficult. when you're at the beginning of your career, if you get fortunate enough to get surrounded by people that have this perspective and allow you to build and grow, it's not necessarily that you have to like
make less,
do it slower or make less, but you're just much more intentional. Because if I had stayed in a house that I bought for $350,000, which was our first house, and I didn't buy the Range Rover and we invested differently at the beginning, or perhaps I just rented and I never bought my primary residence, but I just dumped every bit of capital, I would be fine. In no uncertain terms, I'd be financially free and independent right now. And so it's, you know, if you're at the beginning of your career, learning this lesson right now doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to take you longer. It's just that you might make conscious decisions to do things and spend money differently and invest your time differently. Yeah. And so I spent all this money on coaching to make me a better salesperson. I perhaps needed some of that, but I also needed coaching and direction and proximity to people who were allowing me to develop as a person and as a human being emotionally and spiritually. And so, and then if you're that agent that has already produced outsized outcomes and is making $500,000 or $750,000 or $1 million a year, it's not so much teaching them how to make the money. It's actually like trying to set them free to understand that perhaps making less to focus your time and energy on your personal development in the long term might be better. Mm-hmm. And or sacrificing certain things. Like, I guarantee you a lot of real estate agents making $500,000 or $700,000 or $800,000 should probably sell their house and downsize. But again, that's really hard to do because you feel like you deserve it. Mm-hmm. And so it's just this, it's this hamster wheel. And then you, again, being that it's uncomfortable to think about and have these conversations, then all you do is you surround yourself with people that are like you and that reinforce that behavior and that reward themselves in similar ways and spend their money the same way. And then they get into this false sense of like camaraderie that we're all going in the same direction and one day we'll be free. And then
One day we'll be free.
One day.
I think that's the perfect like end is one day or day one of freedom. Like, one day I'll be free from all this and I'll feel that joy and I'll feel the release. Or do you want to just have day one of freedom now?
Well, and I think, so here's what I would say is that I don't know that you're going to feel free day one either way, but I think that you can choose what you want to be hard, right? Creating wealth is very, very hard, but being poor is also very, very hard. Mm-hmm. Being fit and in shape is very, very hard, but being overweight and unhealthy is also very, very hard. So life is hard, but you can choose things that align with what you want out of life and what you think is important. And a lot of those things are determined by how much exposure you have to ideas and people and ways of doing things. I didn't think 4 or 5 years ago, if you told me that I would be sitting here right now having these conversations, I would have told you that I was crazy.
You didn't believe it.
I didn't believe it. There was no way that the path was make so much money that I invest money and eventually I'll have enough. But it was never defined. It was never curated. And the person that I would have had to become, if I had put in another 10 or 15 years making money the way that I made money for 10 or 15 years, then that is who I am. Mm-hmm. Think about that. If you do the same thing over and over and over and over again, especially if society in general thinks that it's a positive thing, and you do that for 30 years, how likely is it that you can reflect at that point and completely change your life? Mm-hmm. It's very unlikely. And that's why you see agents, they'll work in their 70s and their 80s because they've defined everything. They don't have the relationships. They don't have the financial freedom. They have to keep making the money because they've always spent the money up to what they make and they rewarded themselves with the extra. And now they're 70 years old. They still have to make money in order to keep the lifestyle that they've created high. And on top of that, it's very uncomfortable for them to say, hey, listen, maybe I don't want to do this anymore because I am Ben Esposito. I'm the top real estate agent. I am the mayor of Mansfield. I am that person. And I haven't dedicated the rest of my life to being anybody but that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to give everything you are to be that person. And so I talk a lot about being able to make $1 million. $1 million a year is it has to be intentional. And I would like to make $1 million a year, but there's a certain amount of things that I'm not willing to sacrifice. And I'm not willing to do the same things that I once did to make $1 million. I'd like to be able to make it so that I can become financially free and independent sooner. But I also know that I'm very comfortable with the allotted timeline that I've given myself. If it takes me 5 more years to become financially free and independent, I'm comfortable with that. I'm not willing to sell my house and completely change my lifestyle to do it in 2, but that's also an option.
Mm-hmm.
Or completely change everything and be financially free now. Mm-hmm. But that's also a conscious decision that I am making, knowing what it's going to take.
That's right. The money, you're in control.
Mm-hmm.
You are making that decision.
I'm aware.
You're aware. You're at the driver's seat. The money isn't driving you. Like, you're making that conscious decision. It's not making, like, the lifestyle you set up, the accolades, the pace is not dictating your decisions. Like, you become the driver.
I do. And I think for successful real estate agents, what's important for people to understand too is that you've proven that you can do amazing things. Mm-hmm. So an agent in no uncertain terms that makes $500,000 or more in real estate, like, that is incredibly rare. And they are a special type of business owner and leader, or not leader, but business owner and salesperson and everything else. So there's a certain amount of faith that at that point you can have in yourself that, you know, somebody said to me at one point, they go, you're going to die with a lot of money.
Mm.
And sometimes we get caught in this. Well, if you go from $500,000 to $250,000, that's not the end of the world either. Mm-hmm. Like, if you become an immensely better person, but you have to sell your vacation house and you have to downsize your car and downsize your house, but you actually improve the quality of the person that you are, and you're more authentic to who you are, and your relationships get better and everything else. I'd argue, if you could look at those two lifestyles, very independent of where you are right now, you choose that less money and more developed person, better relationships every single time. But a lot of the times you can't see both options clearly. And so you just go to what is more comfortable.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think that's truly what matters is asking yourself. And it's really hard to look in the mirror.
So that's why, even going back to the beginning of, like, the way that we started, as you can see, like, I can tell you exactly how to lead generate. I can tell you how to structure your business. I can tell you what staffing you need. I can tell you, you know, what scripts to use. I can tell you how to go out and make $1 million.
Yes.
But as you can tell, it's very difficult for me to have a conversation to push people in that direction, because I feel like, with the perspective that I've had in my life, I feel like my intention and purpose is more to direct and guide people to have more of a holistic approach to the way that they look at their business and their lives.
It's not to not make business. That money. It's just, how are you going to get there?
Yeah.
And are you going to be a complete person when you get there?
Yeah.
And a whole person, and have your relationships intact.
And so, but that's the difficulty too, because as I grow and develop as a leader, which is really uncomfortable for me to even say, but, like, as I present more and coach and guide people, I think being able to articulate this, because there's a lot of people that, if I just come at them with spiritual, emotional, and mental health,
they're like, dude, I got stuff.
It will be very hard for me to have an impact on them. So being able to articulate how you can do this and start to change and shift, well, not just dramatically, because if Aaron came out to me and just started with this.
Yes.
And just said, hey, listen, you shouldn't wear a suit anymore, and you should hire, and you should go into social media, and you should do this, and then you should start to scale down your business and all this kind of stuff.
And what you're doing is, like, making some, yeah,
the
yeah.
The fear and the anxiety would be so overwhelming that I would not intentionally, but unintentionally, I would start to distance myself.
Strong arm him. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's more of a calibration. And I think you have a good way of probing people with questions and saying, and it needs to become it needed to be your idea. It needed to be you.
Well, I needed to have an idea.
But it needed to come from you. He just kind of said, hey, have you looked at this? Have you thought about that? Have you really considered what you're doing? Have you considered that you do have this potential? And then you started to pull it apart and to tease it out. And I think that's the answer.
There was a trust that was sort of almost immediate
and
with him.
You, I think, like, could offer that trust because you've made the money. You've been successful. Like, I can get you there. But you can trust me.
That's the beauty of this platform and social media in general, is that people can start to consume information. They can get to know somebody and trust somebody, so that when they hear a message, they're not determining whether that they trust the person or not trust the person, along with whether they agree with or disagree with the message. They can relieve the idea that they don't trust and that this person isn't authentic, and they can just evaluate sort of the advice or guidance that they're hearing on its own merit,
right? Like that.
And
yeah,
being able to detach those two things, because sometimes you'll hear a really good idea, but you don't trust the person that's giving it to you, and or that person hasn't sort of done anything or illustrated that they deserve your trust mm-hmm. or influence. And then even if it's a good idea, the idea that you can sort of independently evaluate it mm-hmm. is very, very low. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's the beauty of this sort of platform, is people can get to know me and determine whether or not they sort of believe in the messaging that I'm giving. And then hopefully this is sort of the impact that I can have. I can help people align themselves with the actions that will not only help them understand who they are and increase their business if it aligns with their goals, but just develop them as business owners and as people in general. And then folks that have already done it, which is a true passion of mine, is being able to sort of go in, because I was in that spot. I was there. I know what it's like to be successful and be so captivated by the money and the things, that I know what that's like. And I know how hard it is to then stop and shift and start to walk away from and letting go of. Letting go
is the known.
Yeah, letting go is way more difficult than obtaining more. It's just so much more difficult. But if you're around the right people and if you're hearing the right messages, there's so much more in life than just selling real estate and making more money and rewarding yourself for making more money. So it's going to, like, again, I'm glad for this opportunity to sort of hash it out. I'm not sure I got any closer to what I'm going to say to people on stage about making $1 million a year, but we got a couple of weeks, so we'll figure this out in the meantime.
Yeah,
but
it's a good start.
Yeah.
It's a good message. I think a lot of people have felt that tension in that moment mm-hmm. in their career.
Yeah.
And they'll feel it again until they actually face it.
Yep.
All right.
Cool. Well, guys, thanks for following along again. Obviously, if you like this sort of thing, subscribe to our YouTube channel,
reach out,
let us know if you have a story yourself. We're always looking to bring great people onto this podcast. So, certainly thanks for watching along and following us, and, we'll see you next time. Peace.
That's your sign off.
Peace.